Hi everyone, welcome to this special episode of Chapel Phil. I'm Marcella.
I'm Samad.
Today we want to highlight Colby Maynor, a deeply loved member of the Parr Center who tragically passed away at the end of 2023. During his time at the Parr Center, Colby made what's truly a lasting impression serving on the Bioethics Society pod, as well as just being a deeply loved member of the community. Samad and I were lucky enough to have taken a course with him in fall of 2023, and this was an ethics seminar course with Dr. Michael Vasquez. And in this course, we were surrounded just entirely with members of the Parr Center. And this is a course that Parr Center members take to achieve the Ethics Scholar designation. So it's a pretty like intimately designed seminar course where we both got to be in conversation a lot with Colby and get to know him better.
We'd like to say thank you to Colby's family for permission to make this episode. We're taking this time to kind of highlight and celebrate Colby's research in this class, as well as just dedicate time to talking about him as a person. Dr. Vasquez gave us the like research products that Colby created worked on during this class, and we wanted to just kind of go through them. We think they're a really good highlight, both of his interests as well as his passion for ethics, his like sharp intellect, as well as being a really good reflection of who he was. You can kind of see his personality shine through the work that he did.
Like I mentioned, in this class, it was a seminar structure, so really conversation-based. We, throughout the semester, wrote reflections and evaluated ourselves on our intellectual virtue. When we did this kind of by like scoring our own virtues based on criteria like open-mindedness, tenacity, humility, and there were a few checkpoints throughout the semester where we had to write reflections. So the final intellectual virtue reflection that Colby wrote, reading through it, I really feel like I got to know more about him as a person. One of the things that he shared when he was scoring himself on intellectual courage, which we can define as a readiness to persist in thinking or communicating, Colby wrote, quote, "My concern is that I would never be able to value my response 5 out of 5, because in my view, it clashes with another intellectual virtue, that is intellectual humility, for which I have a very strong propensity. Intellectual humility is a willingness to own one's intellectual limitations and mistakes, unconcerned with intellectual status or prestige." And I really appreciated just his clear willingness to be wrong and be open to improving and just prioritizing that over being right or being the best. He also said, quote, "One should always leave space for times when one is aware of a situation in which one is clearly not in a position of understanding sufficient to constitute an opinion." I think this just really speaks to what a great listener he was.
Every time you'd be having like a small group discussion with him, he'd make what he thought known, but he'd also ask you question upon question upon question to kind of like really dive into the meat of whatever topic. He was never really satisfied with kind of like a neatly tied bow on any ethical question or inquiry. He always wanted to like learn more and figure out like what kind of constraints on like a discussion we were having might be there, like what blind spots we're missing, that kind of stuff.
Just to read another quote that stuck out to me, he said, I think this is the final sentence in the paper. He said, "I've come to enjoy paying attention to details, for it is virtuous to do so. I still have a lot to learn, but I know I scored 5 out of 5 on the statement, quote, I'm not content until I understand what I'm learning." So yeah, those were just some things we wanted to highlight from his intellectual virtue reflections, because that kind of gets into who he was as a person.
One of the other assignments that we have to do for class, and I wish we were doing some sort of like visual podcast right now so we could show you these slides because they are absolutely hilarious. But like one of the assignments was what Professor Vasquez calls a share dilemma. And basically what we do is you'd have about, 20, 30 minutes?
Yeah.
In class to give a presentation on a real-world ethical issue. Colby's dilemma was one of the last ones, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So most people had gone already, and he kind of like comes bounding into class with this like really high energy, which he always had. He was a very vibrant person. And he puts on this presentation. He's like, "You ready to talk about ethics?" we're like, "Yeah." He puts on this presentation. It's super funny. And he starts by like calling us all losers. He says, "We're all losers." And then he explains about how millennials tend to lose things more than boomers, as well as like the economic value that's lost over time. Like it was this super engaging, like really kind of like wackily designed presentation.
Yeah. If you look at the slides, it's funny because like Swan said, they're funny pictures and it's mostly just pictures. I mean, yeah. There's not really text on them because Colby could just get in front of everyone. And I feel like he was so comfortable with all of us that he could talk and he like cared about this research so much that he could just say it.
And like, I have no doubt that he would give this presentation the exact same way in front of like a group of philosophy professors.
And it was one of those times in class where I just felt like especially a part of the Parsoner community, because we would have those moments in the seminar where it's like a circle table, so we're all kind of looking at each other, and he definitely valued that conversational element of it.
He did a really good job of just making sure that everybody was engaged in getting a turn to speak. Which in like classes like that, as I'm sure you've like experienced, that it can kind of get kind of like monopolized in the conversation. Like you have a couple of people that speak out, and he wasn't really content to like allow that to happen. Mm-hmm. The other thing that was funny is his presentation was on like lost and found. What does it mean to lose things? At what point does he have this kind of like model of that objects can go from being unattended to unclaimed to abandoned? And then there are different ethical distinctions about whether or not it's okay to like take something. If something's merely unattended, then like taking it could be considered like stealing. Whereas if something's abandoned, then you taking it isn't as ethically dubious. And to kind of like really drive this home, he holds up this packet of Lactaid that he had like found in the dining hall or something. And he's like, "I just found this." And holds it up for the entire class to see. And we're like, "What?"
It was so funny.
And his presentation had like photos, these like really wacky photos that he took just around campus of like things that he would consider to be unclaimed versus unattended versus abandoned. And I think the really important thing about like the way that he like this dilemma worked was it wasn't theoretical. And I think like going through everything that he did for this class, as well as like what I know he's like was working on in other classes throughout his life, he was really deeply interested not just in like the theory of ethics, like consequentialism versus like Kantian and like what are the maxims, but rather like how it impacts our day-to-day life. And we're going to talk more about like his final project, which was on like medical ethics, but this was something that people don't like. The lost and found is something that people really don't think about the ethics of doing, but as he did a really great job of showing, this is something that impacts everyone at all points in time. And because there's an information gap between the seeker, like the finder, and the loser, it sets up like this really interesting ethical dilemma. And so he kind of like ended this presentation with this case study about UNC, which he had very strong opinions on. They do this bike auction every year where they'll take all of the bikes that kind of get abandoned or like locked up on campus for ages with no one ever removing them. And they'll cut the locks off them, and then they'll take them to the like Keenan Flagler parking lot and auction them off to people. On one of these slides, he had a picture of like Swiper from
that was so funny too.
from Dora the Explorer, and he was like, "Swiper, no swiping."
But it is swiping, because like he pointed out, I mean, the university then profits off of this, and they claim that the money is then put back into the school for bike safety or like maybe bike racks.
Dubious. So he had like these task questions that I think are pretty illustrative, is like, again, like, this presentation is really kind of goofy. It's wacky. It's, like, comedic. And then he ends with these task questions that are, like, deeply philosophical.
Right.
Do you think that the UNC bike auction is an example of a potentially harmful profit motive that financially incentivize institutional lost and bound opportunism? Which is a hard question to answer. And I think it shows that he wasn't just... He made it funny because he wanted to be engaging, but he also really cared about finding, you know, like, a framework for how to deal with these issues.
And this was actually made into a high school ethics bowl case. And we just had the National High School Ethics Bowl hosted here at UNC. And I was in one of the rooms when they were doing this case study. And it was so special to hear the two teams of high schoolers talk about it and talk about alternative plans for having people keep their bikes, like systems where people could be alerted if their bike was registered in a better system. People could be alerted that their bike has been taken and is going to be in this auction, and things like that. I thought that was really special to just see that Colby kind of kicked that off and contributed to the ethics bowl in that way.
I think he'd be really happy to know that people are, like, still considering this, because it seemed really important to him.
Yeah, definitely. And I've thought about it way more now, just seeing bikes on campus. Yeah, yeah. His other task question in this was, what conditions or details differentiate finding from stealing?
And I think his explanation kind of went back to that explanatory model of, like, unattended versus unclaimed versus abandoned, as well as this, like, idea that if somebody's making an active effort to find the owner, then that could be a condition in which it becomes finding rather than stealing. Whereas stealing, even if it's, like, unattended, like, if you make an active effort to be like, I'm going to try and find the owner of this pearl necklace I found, and you can't find it, and then you keep it, at a certain point, then that's not really, like, stealing. Whereas if you just find the necklace and, like, mine, sorry.
Right.
And especially if, like, the person who's, like, originally belonged to, like, comes to you and be like, hey, that's mine, and you refuse to give it back, then that's, like, pretty cut and dry stealing.
Yeah, you have to make some assumptions about how important the object is to the original owner. And I feel like one of the things Colby was trying to get at is that's, you should never necessarily assume something has less value to the person who lost it just because of your own feelings of value towards that object.
Like, the lactate could be, like, could be some important. It could be somebody's, like, sentimental lactate that their, like, grandma passed back.
It could be. Them, you never know. It was funny because he had that as, like, on the table throughout the whole presentation as, like, a physical example. But I remember at the end of class, he was like, okay, I'm going to go put this back where I found it.
Yeah.
We're going to go ahead and transition into his main paper. So this is a project, he was working on throughout the whole semester of Phil 392. And so the paper is titled Metaphysical Magnification of the Patient-Physician Relationship, Practical Ramifications and Ethical Considerations Implicated in the Clinical Encounter. And this paper is essentially making an argument for why ethics is inseparable from medicine. He also explored the extent to which ethics is practiced in modern medicine. He asked if the clinical encounter in and of itself, it deserves more ethical consideration than is currently appropriated by the contemporary standard for ethics in medicine. He also argued a lot for medical professionals' roles as healers and the extent to which they're responsible for their patients. He separated this practice into two realms, so the personal and communal spheres of health. I really appreciated how much he emphasized that physicians have a duty towards their patients that is personal. It's important for physicians to have that feeling of responsibility towards patients that goes beyond just, like, what they need for treatment. But yeah, there's a certain personal measure there that makes physicians more successful and more helpful to real people. So another point that Colby makes in the paper is this focus on the potential ethical harms of quantifying people's health in terms of numbers or scores, weights. He argued for physicians to employ kind of a holistic view when they're treating individuals, which I think makes a lot of sense. It's really easy. I mean, we've developed so many great tools for measuring people's health and observing people's health, but it's also important to see people as people who are in front of you. So he says, by focusing on objective data at the expense of a holistic subjectivity during the time when a patient and physician physically interact is immoral and likens the patient's subjective point of view to medical information, no different from that which is included on their electronic health record. And each patient is received and treated as a means of defeating disease as if it is a strategy game. Yeah, I think he is saying, like, we have to go beyond what we can do in a health record, and that's why you're treated by people, because there's a personal aspect to that relationship that can be really healing.
He was really focused on physicians not getting kind of lost in the mission of, you know, like ending cancer or something like that, but like really treating each patient as a person who they have the tools and capacity to help to the best of their ability. So it's not about, you know, if you're an oncologist, it's not about the cancer. It's about the person who's suffering from it and treating them as an end in themselves. It's less like kind of Kantian framework, although I don't think he explicitly drew it out like that. Part of what he was trying to say, or part of what he was saying, was that disease places like a really high burden on the patient, and it's ethically necessary for the doctor to recognize that and place just as a high of a burden on themselves. He really was focused on kind of ensuring that this like physician-patient relationship was equitable, and that nobody was taking too much of a burden on themselves.
And I think advocating so heavily for like pushing the ethical guidelines of medicine is so important, as I mean, we are also experiencing a lot of changes in the health system, especially he kind of touches on this, but like moving to more electronic health records. I think for some people during this time that there's like a level of distrust that could happen as that moves more electronic.
What Colby is saying in this paper is something that would be really difficult for a lot of physicians just because of like the amount of work it takes, but also it's necessary. You can't be, and what he's arguing is that like you can't be an ethical doctor if you're not willing to kind of take on that high responsibility, because the patients deserve it. Like they're in a position where they need like this treatment, and they need it to be given to the best of that doctor's ability. And that requires the kind of like personal attention and care.
Yeah. He argues for treating individual physicians as microcosms for investigation of medical ethics. So incorporating this personal responsibility in treatment kind of encourages physicians to constantly be investigating this and turning inward at themselves to see, how am I actualizing not just medical knowledge, but medical ethical principles of care? Yeah, so that was Colby's main research project. And we just wanted to highlight that because it was a semester-long project that he put a lot into and obviously really cared about. So we're going to move into just reading some statements that other members of the PAR Center wrote about Colby. These were read at Colby's memorial hosted by the PAR Center. And when Saman and I were there, we were just really blown away by these personal accounts.
So these are all anonymous, but they're all members of the PAR Center, people who knew Colby, who worked with him in the pod, just were in class with him, that kind of stuff. So Colby was a kind and positive presence in the PAR Center. I didn't get to know him well, but he seemed like a good guy and was always cheerful when he spoke. A memory I have about him that sticks out is when he was tabling in the pit last semester for the PAR Center. I remember thinking that it's good that he was at the table because of his welcoming demeanor and love of the PAR Center. He definitely put our best face forward.
When I first met Colby, I was deeply impressed by his passion for making the world a better place through his research. Few people, if any, have made such a first impression. Colby always made me optimistic about our future, and I'm thankful to have gotten to know him through the Parr Center.
I transferred to the school last semester. As a new student, I was both astonished and overwhelmed by how big the school is and the number of possibilities. I met Colby outside of Davis, where he was tabling for cancer research. Colby already seemed sweet and warm, which was comforting and something I desperately needed when I met him. We began talking, and I brought up the fact that I'm a transfer. He immediately began to trying to help me, telling us that us transfers have to stick together and look out for each other. We talked about my interests, and he recommended me to the Parr Heels. We exchanged contact information, and from that point forward, he was so helpful in not only getting me involved in the Parr Heels, but helping me transition to the school. Since he's passed, I've talked to friends of mine about him, people I didn't even know knew him, and everyone can agree that he was a warm and kind person. I have the feeling that Colby was just good and didn't think twice about helping someone out, but to me, his kindness meant everything, especially after a rocky first couple of days. I will always be grateful.
Colby was so charismatic and brought the energy into every room he came into. From his insightful knowledge he'd share in class to his laugh and smile in our pod meetings, he embodied what it meant to be a scholar, a friend, and an amazing person.
I think something Dr. Stroud said during the memorial really stuck with me, and that was just how constantly joyful he was. Like, he really, no matter what was going on in his life, no matter, like, you know, work and school, like, UNC can be a really stressful place sometimes. He just always, whenever I saw him, had a smile on his face. He was always talking to somebody about something that he thought was interesting. He'd just sit and listen to people, and he'd ask them questions, and he'd tell them about what he was, like, doing and what he was interested in. And he did all of it with just, like, this massive smile on his face and this really contagious laugh. It was like a bright summer day, like on the quad, with the, you know, like with the wind breezing and like the sun's out and the birds are chirping. And it was just kind of like this presence that filled every room he was in.
Yeah, I have this memory of me and you walking out of Caldwell, and because we would always walk out of class together, and Colby was with us. So it was the three of us, which I don't really remember another time when it was just the three of us, but we were walking out, and the ginkgo trees had kind of just turned yellow, and all the leaves had fallen, and the three of us just stood there looking, and that was just like one of my last memories with Colby, and I really cherish it. I also feel like he, every time I saw him, it felt like he was excited to see me.
Yeah.
And I know that he did that with everyone, because he just cared about making people feel like their presence was valued and that they were special just showing up as they were. Yeah, so we just want to again thank Colby's family for giving us permission to make this episode. I really enjoyed just reflecting on Colby, just how I knew him as a person, but also this really gave me a chance to kind of appreciate his research much more and understand it more.
So I hope this can kind of like serve as just a glimpse into what he was thinking about and working on.
Yeah, I mean, we both feel so lucky to have known him. So anyone who didn't have the pleasure of knowing him, I hope that, you know, they can learn from listening to this.